Chapter 43. In his mind, the theory was perfect. They weren't particularly high up, and the mud around the tower shouldn't have been deep. Of course, there was no way of actually testing it in advance. Greg hit the thin coating of surface water and kept on going, his momentum only slowing when the water reached his thighs. He let his knees bend, absorbing inertia. Thick, viscous goo rose up his shins, embedding them. That was the point where his left hand thumped into the water, finally overloading his beleaguered cortical node. Greg screamed the lancets of pain its faltering barricade let through. Brilliant starbursts of light danced across his vision. His feet were resting on something solid. He could see guttering orange light washing across a big clump of reeds about 3 meters in front of him, marking the perimeter of a low mound of rubble. A gable end was sticking up in the middle of it, inclined at 45 degrees, supported by a buttress of rafters, which resembled some bizarre geometric whale skeleton. The water had come up to the bottom of his ribcage, leaving his folded legs entirely under the mud. Greg tried to straighten his knees. It took an age before even the faintest tremble of motion began. The mud refused to let go. Panic churned his gut. He had absolutely nothing to grip, nothing he could use to drag himself out. His leg muscles had to do all the work. And any second now, Kendricks's crewman would be storming out of the tower. "Where are you, Greg?" Gabriel called.
"I'm coming."
Was he rising, fractionally faster? The pain from his left hand had been suppressed again, making it easier to concentrate. He could feel the mud sliding down his thighs.
"Get into the reeds! Go on! Move!"
His buttocks left the mud behind, and he stood up. There was water up to the top of his legs. The mud still incarcerated his knees. Greg brought his left foot out of the mud's suction clutch, standing stork style, then fell forwards, windmilling his arms. The strain on his right knee was incredible. His body weight was trying to bend it in exactly the opposite direction to which it was designed to hinge. He grabbed at the reeds with his right hand, pulling himself along towards the cover of the mound. The mud relinquished its hold on his right leg with extreme reluctance. A chorus of wild shouting broke out behind him. Mark's voice rose above the others, bawling to bring some lights. Greg grasped at another clump of reeds. His progress was a combination of swimming, slithering, and crawling, all at a snail's pace. He was completely hampered by his desperation to avoid any commotion. Thankfully, the reeds began to get thicker and higher. He heard a long, erratic stutter of muffled thuds from behind him, and guessed at food cans rupturing in the fire. A quick glance round let him see the tower, a black, phallic monolith probing a cloud-smeared night sky. The first floor's broken window was a glaring yellow rectangle, while others glowed with Bioloom's softer pink-white radiance. Sketchy shadows were moving about inside. Several people were dashing about on the grass ring around the tower's base. 3 were splashing through the shallows, but not venturing far. If they wanted to get across to the reeds, they'd have to get down on their bellies and squirm. It was the only way. They didn't have the motivation. A couple of intense torch beams stabbed out, scouring the reeds. Greg rolled back onto his stomach and began his serpent wriggle again. 30 seconds later, there was hard ground under his elbows. Reeds competing with stiff blades of grass. He was using his knees as well as his elbows now, scuttling towards the gable end and cover. He knew exactly what Kendrick and Armstrong would do next. Flinty pebbles and rapier grass lacerated his skin. Somewhere over to his left, another heavy body was burrowing through the vegetation. An electromagnetic rifle opened up, warbling loudly. Bullets thudded into the mound, pinged against the brickwork, ricocheted off, whining. Greg kept going. "Get over there!" That was Kendrick's unmistakably enraged voice. Murmurs of argument followed. The white torchlight trimmed the tips of the reeds around Greg. Tiny, reddish-brown, ovate flowers glowed lambently. Midges formed a silver galaxy overhead. The light passed on. The electromagnetic rifle had fallen silent. Greg reached the sloping brickwork. Gabriel was ahead of him, panting heavily at the end of a streaky mud trail.
"God, the smell!" she exclaimed.
"What smell?"
"Some people."
He climbed gingerly to his feet. The island they were on was about 20 meters at its widest. Greg had cherished a half-notion that the mounds would all be connected. But the next one was a good 40 meters away. Algae-curdled water sloshed like crude oil between the two. It didn't look as though there was much of it on top of the mud.
"Close off," Greg said,
then flinched as the electromagnetic rifle poured another fusillade of bullets into the gable end.
"Do what?"
Gabriel asked. She was cradling her left hand again. Her face was haggard, totally lethargic.
"We've got a lot of swimming to do. Clothes are going to drag us under."
"Swim where?"
"Clear of the tower, remember? Kilometer at least. How long have we got?"
Gabriel closed her eyes.
"About 20 minutes, maybe less."
"Do we survive?"
"Some of us do. Some of us don't."
She sounded completely disinterested. Greg ducked his head round the side of the bricks, bringing it back again.
"Bugger.
Now what?"
"They put the fire out. I was hoping it would be a beacon to the ships on the Neen. Somebody might report it."
That brought a half-hysterical giggle from Gabriel, ending in a gurgling cough.
"Don't you worry, Greg. Lots of people are going to see your tower before tonight's out. You betcha."
"Oh, yeah."
He felt stupid.
"Let's go."
He started shrugging out of the dinner jacket, clenching his teeth as his left hand dragged through the arm. It had swollen badly, skin stretched taut, pulling open the grazes. Trousers followed, and the discovery that buckles are tricky, one-handed. More shouting had broken out from the tower. Lots of conflicting orders interwound with Kendrick's repeated urgings and Armstrong's controlled barks. Gabriel gave him a remorseful stare before starting half-heartedly on the buttons of her blouse. Greg peeled his trousers off and helped her pull her blouse gingerly over her inflated left hand.
"Put your shoes back on," he said.
A third burst of rifle fire lashed the bricks. They bent double, keeping the bulk of the small pyramid between themselves and the tower as they crept down to the grey slime. The stuff was semi-liquid, a thick gelatin that squelched and undulated alarmingly as Greg immersed himself. It closed around him, finding its way into every orifice. But he didn't sink. In fact, the worst of it was on the surface. A 60-centimeter stratum of water had been sandwiched between the spongy mud and lathery algae. Gabriel groaned as she lowered herself behind him, and the cold mire enveloped her. Greg began to move, a torturously slow sidestroke, kicking hard with his feet. Big, fecal gobs of the pulpy algae clotted his right arm, splattering over his face. He had to stop every 4 or 5 strokes and wipe it off. His eyes were stung raw. Gabriel had it easier. He was path-breaking for her, clearing a ragged channel. When they reached the second island, Greg began to worry about what kind of chase was being organized back at the tower. He looked over his shoulder and saw that someone had opened the tower's top-floor window. They were raking the torch beam over the first island and the surrounding water. The light wasn't powerful enough to reach him, but he made Gabriel keep below the wavering tops of the thin reeds as the pair of them crossed over to the island's opposite side. Away to the right, Greg could see the bloated humps of decomposing tree trunks protruding from the algae like surfaced whales. The number, about 30, implied some sort of park, which ruled out that direction. They needed to move fast now, build distance before the tower blew. The park would be genuine swamp, impossible to traverse. 150 meters ahead were the first ranks of buildings recognizable as such. Detached houses, their walls partially collapsed and roofs concave, but remaining upright. Bridging the gap was a pockmarked landscape of ash-green atolls, separated by hoary stretches of slough.
"Any preference direction-wise?"
Greg asked. Gabriel shook her head.
"No, but you were right about getting clear. That explosion is a brute. I hope I can make it."
She was a state. Loose folds of flab were caked in thick sable mud. Her hair was a tangle of ossifying dreadlocks. Every breath was asthmatic, a battle against coagulating catarrh. She twitched like a palsy victim.
"No problem,"
he said, wishing to God he meant it. They waded into the first slough channel. The fifth island they came to was much larger than the previous four. Iron girders were sticking out among the sedges. There was more grass than reeds on the crest. Soil had begun to accumulate in the crevices between the fragments of stone and cement. Greg cut his calf on something jagged. Cursed. The island's far shore brought them to within 30 meters of the houses. One more immersion and back onto solid ground. This time it was a long, straight ridge parallel to the row of houses. It was cluttered with twisted, drooping chimney stacks and buckled rafter apexes gnarled with scabby lichens. Slate tiles formed a loose, flaky shingle beneath their feet, making the going hard. Just as he reached the summit, Greg heard the sound. A low-volume hum in the background, but rising in pitch and intensity, in menace. A note he was irksomely familiar with.
"Move out, double time," he said. "The bastards have inflated the hovercraft."
"No more," Gabriel said wretchedly.
"One last time, that's all. Then it'll all be over."
"Yes, yes, you're right. Only a few minutes left. It's clearing, Greg. So much clearer now."
Realization struck. He could sense her mind. A pale, disconsolate mist of disjointed thoughts, fluttering aimlessly, corrupted with coarse threads of harrowing pain. Gabriel was animated by adrenaline alone, and her endocrine glands were virtually exhausted. They'd escaped the twins' nullifying effect. Greg let his gland run riot, charging his cerebellum to overload and screw the risk. Synapses vibrated shrillly under the stress. Delusional ripping sounds filtered into his ears, coming from inside his skull, neuron membranes splitting open. His espersense swept out. It was a heady boost. Whole once more. Two hovercraft were curving away from the tower, each containing three minds. Radiant, hard-wound balls of mercurial malevolence. Greg recognized Toby riding in one of them, along with a couple of crewmen he couldn't place. Mark and Kendrick were paired in the second, along with its pilot. There was no sign of the other minds Greg knew to be out there. Armstrong and Turner, not even Hermione. The tower was an empty shell to his espersense, which meant at least one twin had remained behind. The big question was whether the third hovercraft had been inflated. A faint haze of small minds glowed around the wavering perimeter of his espersense, occasional twinkles within. Animals of some sort, clinging to a dour existence amid the ruins. Abandoned pets reverted to their true feral nature, rodents scrabbling to stay above the mud, an invasion of reptiles. He pulled Gabriel roughly down the slope and into the bog which covered the street, ignoring her weepy cries of protest. They didn't have to swim. The syrupy mud drowning the tarmac was only a few centimeters deep, lapping over his feet like slushed snow. It was possible to wade. The raft of algae came up to mid-thigh. Greg was nearly tempted to hide in one of the houses. None of them had doors or windows left. Pick one at random and cower down. Unless the hovercraft boasted some pretty sophisticated sensors, Kendrick and Toby would never find him in time. But the dangerously dilapidated condition of the walls stopped him. If the tower went up with anything like the violence Gabriel claimed, the friable houses would collapse on top of them. They reached a mouldering dune which had once been a Leylandii hedge and squelched over it. Greg saw two white orioles sliding fluidly across the horizon behind them, winding down through the slough channels. The drone of the hovercraft propellers drifted in and out of audibility. Kendrick and Toby were fanning out, their search pattern carrying them farther apart. At least, it was only two. He steered Gabriel down the narrow, dank gully between two houses. There were animals on the other side of the walls, more than he'd originally thought, scurrying around frantically. The garden at the rear of the house backed onto another garden. Head-high panel fencing marked out the boundary, putrefying laths drooping under their own weight. In one corner was a greenhouse whose panes were pasted with hand-sized valentine leaves. Some abandoned horticultural treasure had thrived in the heat and abundant nutrient-soaked mud, making it look as though the aluminium-framed structure was about to burst apart at the seams. Caustic fingers of silver-white light probed through a gap between a couple of houses 100 meters away. The propeller noise was loud, fluctuating in strident piccolo whistles. Greg sensed Toby's churlish mind. The man was spite-laden, yearning to be the one who found the quarry. Instinct chafed at him. He knew Greg was nearby. A nature-ordained hunter. The bulk of the houses blocked off the light as the hovercraft glided down the street. Then the questing fingers reappeared, closer this time, 3 houses away. Greg urged Gabriel behind the greenhouse and waited until the searchlight fluoresced the verdant avocado-green leaves. The green corona died as the hovercraft moved on, but Greg knew that knot of determination in Toby's mind. He'd order the pilot to take the hovercraft down the gardens once he reached the end of the street. His Esper sense tracked Kendrick, who was still patrolling the slough channels. They couldn't go back, and the blast would turn the confined gardens into a death trap of flying masonry.
"Through there," Greg pointed ahead.
The row of houses in front of them was virtually identical to the ones behind, only in slightly better condition. Gabriel moved like an automaton. Greg kicked at the panel fence, tearing through it like tissue paper. There was a fruit cage on the other side, a box made from galvanized steel poles wrapped in a tattered cobweb of black nylon netting. The sight of it sparked an idea. He reached up to one of the crossbeams with his right hand and began to tug. The pole was held in place between the uprights by 2 molded plastic sockets at each end, both of them fractured and bleached by the decade-long torrent of UV-infested sunlight. One of the sockets crackled at the pressure he applied, then snapped abruptly. Greg yanked the other end of the pole out of its socket with a burst of ebullient strength, tearing the netting as it came free. The pole was 3 meters long, in good condition. The zinc coating had whitened down the years, but it had protected the steel from rust.
"What's happening?" Gabriel asked.
"I'm improvising a little present for Toby."
There was no longer any vindictiveness at the prospect, not even malice. This was an intrinsic fight for survival now, nothing more. His mind had relegated Toby to an obstacle which had to be tackled. Hatred was all the other man's problem. Greg clamped the pole between his knees and tied on a strip of the ripped nylon mesh. It was a laborious job. He had to use his teeth to grip the end of the strip while his fingers formed the knot. Spears didn't come any more primitive, but the rudimentary tail ought to keep its trajectory stable for a few meters. They slogged towards a narrow alleyway between the 2 houses ahead. The disturbingly concave walls had so many bricks missing, they looked like 2 vertical checkerboards. There was an unstable aggregation of brick chunks and sandy earth in the gap, rising 0.5 meter above the algae. Greg had lost his shoes somewhere in the slough channels. His feet were unrecognizable, lumps of gummy tar which ached abominably. If he stood on anything sharp, they'd go completely numb as the pain breached the cortical node's threshold. When they reached the small front garden, they were knee-deep in the greasy mire again. The street they found themselves in was virtually intact. Greg could almost believe he'd walked out into a pre-dawn autumn morning of 15 years ago. Rusted, windowless hulks of petrol-driven cars were parked along the road. Barren trees stood tall. Low brick walls were topped by fanciful wrought-iron railings. The lampposts were still vertical. It was a well-ordered slice of middle-class suburbia. Only the algae-matted water shattered the illusion of normality. A curtain of light streaked out at the far end of the houses, 150 meters away. Toby's hovercraft had turned down into the gardens. Greg sensed the excitement rising in the man's mind. Toby's native instinct was telling him his prey was nearby. Greg found it uncanny to observe, almost as though his own ability was being turned against him. He and Toby must share the same mental genotype.
"I want you to walk down to the other end of the street," he told Gabriel.
She didn't reply, standing with shoulders drooping, arms dangling at her side. Her left hand looked appalling, tumescent and inflamed. Mud had dried and cracked on it, as though she was shedding a hardened outer skin, allowing new, blue tender flesh to break through. He refused the impulse to check his own.
"Listen, Gabriel, you must walk down the street."
And when the hovercraft comes, you fall down, okay? That's all. Can you manage that for me?
A confused frown puckered her forehead. Walk?
Yes.
Greg pressed his hand on her back, starting her off.
And when the light shines, you go for cover.
Gabriel's feet had found a shuffling rhythm.
Fall down.
That's right.
Orders,
she mumbled vaguely.
I won't let you down, Greg. I won't.
Greg left her doing her apathetic sleepwalk, feeling a prized turd for using her as bait, and headed back up the street towards the wide beam of light which kept shooting out, documenting the hovercraft's progress. Algae foamed around his knees. Slithery mud tried to pull his feet from under him. Sometimes he thought he could feel the hardness of the tarmac. The light shone out of the gap in front of him. Greg stood still, listening to the drone of the propeller growing louder, echoing back and forth across the street. The light was extinguished. A faint trace of it rippled along the roof of the house. Toby's hovercraft drew level with him. Light slammed out of the gap, transfixing him like a rabbit in a headlamp. A scream of ecstatic triumph burst from Toby's mind. Greg's vision was wiped out in a sparkling pink mist as his retinas were overwhelmed by a targeting laser. He lurched forwards. The warbling of electromagnetic rifle fire punctured the night. Bullets stitched a line of small craters in the algae behind him. The propeller drone rose to a crescendo as the pilot fought to turn the hovercraft. Greg was dumped into the darkness again. The laser impact abated, and he saw a smattering of stars through the shredded gauze of cirrus clouds. He could hear the ripping sounds of the hovercraft riding roughshod over fences. Greg felt his nerves cooling, heartbeat slowing, tension abating, going with the flow. He sensed the hovercraft racing down the gardens, heading back the way it had come. A final visual check on Gabriel showed him a forlorn figure bumbling through the mire. His Esper sense showed her mind was operating with cyborg simplicity, completely absorbed by the mechanics of walking. He lowered himself into the algae. The hovercraft had reached the end of the gardens now, rounding the last house in the row. Greg caught a glimpse of its insect eye array of lights sliding into view as he dropped below the surface. Esper sense revealed all he needed, real and hypersense universes entwining smoothly. Toby, leaning against the prow, fists clenched, eyes bugging, slipstream plucking at him. The merciless lights finding Gabriel, her legs buckling, sending her toppling forwards. Toby's howl of revenge consummation. Greg could hear a throbbing sound transmitted through the filthy water, getting louder. Toby's mind was a lurid spewpoint of animus thoughts zooming towards him. Greg pressed his feet down hard as the hovercraft rumbled directly overhead. He broke surface, bringing a cloying cone of algae with him. A blast of desert air wind escaping from beneath the hovercraft skirt ablated the mucus from his face. He kept rising like a shabby tenth-rate Neptune, galvanized spear in his hand, already drawn back for the throw, aiming. The pole steady. And fling. It shot through the wide mesh of the protective carbon fiber grille at the rear of the hovercraft, hitting the spinning propeller full on. The trajectory bent then, as the tip was chopped by the blade's leading edge, tugging it down and round. That by itself wasn't disastrous. The blade edge was designed to handle bird impacts. But the length of the pole meant it was deflected right into the mounting. The propeller's axle bearing sheared off instantly under the terrible impact stress. And a 2-meter diameter 500 RPM buzzsaw exploded out of the grill to digest the rear of the pneumatic hovercraft. There was a thunderclap blowout, and the prow of the hovercraft bucked up into the air, losing rigidity, light beams strafing the sky. Three bodies and pieces of loose equipment were catapulted in a short arc. A tremendous spume of water jetted up as the propeller hit the algae, chewing through. One of the bodies fell into its base. The shredded hovercraft hull flopped back down. The lights went out, and the spume died. It began to rain gobs of mud and algae, pattering down over a wide area. One mind had survived. The body which housed it writhing feebly. Another body was face down in the water. Toby. Of the third there was no sign. Greg waded forward. It was easy going. A vast patch of the street had been stripped of its covering of algae. Gabriel was floating on her back, half-submerged. Greg got his hand under her head and lifted her. She coughed weakly.
I did it, didn't I, Greg? Just like you wanted?
Sure did. And no messing.
Did you get him?
Yeah. They aren't going to hazard anyone again.
Four light beams pinioned him. Kendrick's hovercraft was turning down into the street. He froze into place, too exhausted to run. Besides, he could never have left Gabriel. The hovercraft approached at a cautious, unhurried pace. Greg shielded his eyes against the glare. Kendrick was standing in the prow, in front of the Perspex windscreen. The epitome of the great white hunter, electromagnetic rifle cradled in a light grip, one foot on the gunwale. Greg saw it coming, reading it straight from Gabriel's mind. Genuine telepathy. His mouth gaped, and he pointed high into the western sky. Kendrick's mind registered sublime contempt that Greg would try such a pathetic stunt. Then vacillation set in, precisely because it was so unlikely. He looked round to follow the direction of Greg's accusing finger, just in time to see a frigid saffron dawn expand across the sky above Wisbeach. The light source was directly above them, a cold, dazzling star which crawled through the genuine constellations at an infinitesimal pace. Its radiance was throwing shadows as sharp-edged as daylight. Greg could see wisps of flurry cloud gusting high overhead. They must have been kilometers away. Gabriel began to laugh. The false star was as intense as noonday sunlight, then brighter. It began to elongate. Brick walls glared scarlet. Dew-mottled algae sparkled like a diamante ice flow. Intuition whispered into Greg's brain. He knew. The Merlin. Then his far-flung esper sense delivered the final shock, a single band of incendiary thought originating from the space probe's bioware nodes. Philip Evans's unholy vengeance glee as he hurtled inexorably towards Leopold Armstrong. The Merlin descended at orbital velocity, boring a vacuum tunnel through the lower atmosphere. A purple-white plasma comet with a rigid incandescent tail of super-ionized air, stabbing down like some monstrously overpowered strategic defense laser. Greg flung his arms desperately over his face, trying to save his eyes. There was carmine bloodlight, then sable blackness. The blast wave was a white-noised tsunami. It plucked Greg out of the mire and sent him spinning through space. He could see the street's houses disintegrating, slates taking flight, bricks avalanching. The air had become a blizzard of giant splinters and powdery fragments. He saw the tower. Rather, where the tower had been. A thick column of fusion-hot air fountaining up into the darkening sky. Its flickering vermilion fluorescence was sheathed by ragged braids of ebony soot clouds. Garish blue-green static webs discharged around its mushrooming crown. For a liquid, the water was incredibly hard.